Learning struggles are very traumatic in the brain. If you have a really awesome homeschooling environment, that doesn't mean that your child's perception of their learning challenges is not causing them anxiety, causing them chronic stress, and causing them trauma.
Welcome to the Christy Faith Show, where we share game-changing ideas with intentional parents like you. I'm your host, Christy Faith, experienced educational advisor and homeschool enthusiast. Together, we'll explore ways to enrich and transform both your life and the lives of your children. Welcome to today's episode of the Christy Faith Show, where we bring you game-changing ideas to enhance your homeschools and your kids' childhoods. I am so happy to have Sandy Zamalis here today. She is a certified cognitive specialist, an executive director and owner of two Learning RX franchises, one in Stanton and one in Harrisburg, Virginia. She is a former homeschooling mom of two. She homeschooled for 10 years. Yay, homeschooling. But she's currently an empty nester, which is exciting because she has the time to pour into us today. Thank you so much for being here. And her passion is helping kids and adults unlock learning success and confidence by strengthening weak underlying cognitive skills. Now, Sandy, I got to tell you, I have been stalking you, I think, since you very first came on TikTok. And I thought, one day I am going to have a podcast and one day I am going to invite this lady on my podcast, because I don't know if you, and maybe you are aware of this, and maybe this is why you went into the field that you're in. I can't wait to hear your story. But I feel like for the homeschool culture, there aren't a lot of well-known resources to go to get the help that we need, whether it is if our kid needs to see a reading specialist or any type of therapies. They're a little bit harder to find because they're not offered through our school system, through our IEPs and things like that. So we have to put in a little bit more elbow grease to get our kids the help they need. And if anybody knows me, it's that I have read thousands of IEPs. And in those IEPs, when I would read them, I would always see recommendations for kids to get some cognitive training. So I wanted to bring this idea and this concept to my audience. I'm so happy that Sandy is here to unpack what this is. And maybe this episode was for you and you're like, wait a minute, this is what my kid needs, or maybe this is what I need. So I am so happy to have you here today, Sandy. Would you please share a little bit about yourself? I'm sure I missed a lot, your background, why you got into what you did, and go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, Christy. We were just talking before we hopped on that we stalk each other on TikTok, so it's super fun to be part of your podcast. So a little bit of my backstory. So we moved to Virginia. We lived in Pennsylvania for about 15 years and we moved to Virginia about 2012. And at that time, that was when my family decided it was time for my kids to go back to school. I didn't graduate my kids from homeschooling, but my son got 10 years, my daughter got 8. And in that time, when they were going back to school, we were all in transition. They were figuring out this new place we lived, going to public school for the first time. I was trying to figure out what the, you know, heck to do with myself, what was going to be my next thing. And I've always loved education. So I thought, well, let me go back to school and get my master's degree. And let me think about teaching. I've almost finished my master's degree in education, but when it got to the point where you had to do the practicum or the semester, the student teaching, the amount of misery that I saw in the school just was not inspiring, right? It wasn't something I could see as my next chapter. And sort of serendipitously, I was in one of my classes. I was learning how to teach kids how to read a class during my master's program. And someone behind me was telling me about this cool job they had. They were talking about a center that's not too far from me. And they were talking about all these cool things they were doing and how wonderful it was. And my ears just perked up and I was like, what is that? That's really interesting. So I started asking more questions and she said, hey, well, I think there's a center right near you. And I said, oh, well, really? And I just happened to Google it one day while I was in the parking lot of a YMCA. And I literally found out it was like 2 minutes from where I was. I drove into their parking lot and I introduced myself and I fell in love with Learning RX, cognitive training, and everything that it had to offer. The thing that really kind of caught my eye part that was just really sad for me when I was thinking about teaching was just the lack of one-on-one time that mm-hmm. teachers have with their students. A lot of the time when I was utilized in the classroom to help a teacher, it was always just to help a student catch up, to try to finish their worksheet. But, you know, you're given 5 minutes to help them catch up on a week's worth of homework. mm-hmm. And it was like, no, there's got to be a better way. They're behind for a reason. What's the reason they're behind? Playing catch up can't be the goal all the time. There's some skills missing here. So when I came to the center, when I came to LearningRx, that's what we do. I got to see that firsthand. I was super inspired by the founder of LearningRx. His name is Dr. Ken Gibson. He was a pediatric optometrist who had dyslexia, and he wanted to develop a program that could help his kids. Dyslexia does have a high genetic component to it. Mm-hmm. So he knew his kids were going to struggle. And so he worked with many specialists, speech and language pathologists, OTs, vision therapists, cognitive psychologists, to put together the program that we have today. In fact, the program actually started in doctor's offices. If you've ever heard of PACE, P-A-C-E.
What?
Yeah.
Yes! That's, are you kidding yeah. me?
No, that's us. Yeah, LearningRx used to be PACE.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, how do you guys compare to PACE? I literally
we are PACE. we're a bigger, broader PACE. So PACE is very specific and very geared towards what we call our THINK program, which is our foundational program. But LearningRx has a reading program that we've added on, math program that we've added on, a comprehend program that we've added on, including a study skills program that we've added on. So yeah, so it used to be PACE, then it became LearningRx, and then globally we're actually BrainRx. So there are centers all over the world. So I fell in love. That's what happened. That's my story. I fell in love with brains and helping kids.
That's a large part of my audience are homeschool families, and some of us never put our kids in the system, and we actually don't know what we're missing. Can you tell us what we're missing?
Sure.
But you mentioned the word, you saw a lot of misery. Can you expand on that a little bit?
So the thing I try to explain to parents, because I actually help families with lots of backgrounds. So the people that come to my center, I have homeschool families, I have private school families, I have public school families. The thing I try to just explain is that in a classroom setting, you have one teacher, usually, sometimes you have some aides, and you've got anywhere from 20 to 30 kids in the classroom, and they all have their own unique needs. So ideally, if a student has really strong cognitive skills, they're able to keep up with the teaching really, really well. They can do the tasks they need to do. They can perform the way they need to do. But if there's any hiccup along the way, then we've got to help those kids still be successful in the classroom. Yeah. So right now what we do, and you're probably very familiar with this, Christy, is that we, you know, we develop 504 IEP plans to help those students if they go through a process where they have to be tested and kind of deemed to see if they're eligible for those services. The problem with that is that for a lot of kids, they can be in what was a school psychologist or an IEP team might be deemed an average level, but functionally they might be really low in a certain level. And so then what they develop is an IEP or 504 to help them accommodate for any of those really weak skills or compensate for those really weak skills. Mm-hmm. What most parents don't understand is that their skills that can be strengthened, and you can overcome those needs for those accommodations and compensation strategies. We, I think collectively for a long time, thought the brain was kind of stuck. You were born with the brain you got, and you just need to have workarounds if there's any hiccups or missing pieces, but that's not true. And I think what we're seeing in the schools even today with the frustration, the anxiety, a lot of ODD behaviors is coming from a skill deficit that's not being addressed. The thing that most parents, and this includes homeschooling parents and a lot of friends that I have still in the homeschool community will say this same thing. When you have a skill deficit, things like not being able to finish a curriculum, or going at a really slow pace can hinder that child's ability to make progress in time, right? So the advantage of homeschooling is that you can do that. kids in public school and private school don't have that advantage. Right. They're on a freight train. They've got to get through that material by the end of the year. The advantage of homeschooling is that you can take your time, but that doesn't mean that the skill deficit isn't still there and needs to be addressed so that as the child gets older, they're able to handle more and more complex tasks that are still going to challenge those skill areas.
I love that. And I am a huge believer in giving our kids what they need now and equally preparing them for a bright future. And I do think that when we spot things with our kids learning or areas that we need to work on, I agree with you so much. Simply compensating for those things and making adaptations isn't actually working towards them overcoming these particular challenges. It's not necessarily building the resilience that we're looking for. And ultimately, it can hinder from setting our kids up for a successful life. Now, none of us, none of our brains are perfect, right? We all could grow in certain areas, but I, you know, simply the concept of working memory and how it's so hard sometimes. I know we had families at our center that were stuck for years just on math facts. Their kids could not retain. They could not retain. Could you tell me a little bit about what are cognitive skills and how they impact kids' learning?
Sure. So I'm going to pull up a little chart just so I stay on track and get them all. So I'm going to talk about the core seven. Okay. There's a lot of sub skills and a lot of things that fall under these core seven. But I think if we talk about the core seven, your listeners are get a good idea of what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
So the first one I want to talk about is attention. Most people think about that as focus. We actually look at that in our centers in three different ways. We look at sustained attention. How long can you focus on a task, especially a really challenging one? We talk about selective attention. How well can you tune things out and tune into a task at hand? So most people think of that as being distracted, right? Whether it be thoughts, movement, or someone clicking their pen around you, that selective attention is really important. You need to be able to push sound out so that you can focus when you need to.
Oh man, I'm feeling seen. You're going to be listing all my problems. Go ahead.
The third one is divided attention, and that's how well you slide in and out of your working memory. It's really a switching skill. It's being able to switch back and forth between different balls that you're juggling in your mind, okay? So that's attention. So we did a study not too long ago where we looked at kids that had diagnosed ADHD and we looked at their skills. You know, like I said, we're a national organization, so there are centers all over the US. And so we have a lot of large pool of students to look at. And when we compiled that data, what we saw is that kids who struggle with attention, actually attention wasn't the weakest skill. The weakest skills that were underneath that were processing speed, working memory, and long-term memory. So if you just address attention, which is really important, I call it the gatekeeper because it, you know, you got to have attention in order for anything to come in. If you just address attention, you're not really hitting those underlying skills that are maybe causing some of that lack of attention, whether it be selective, divided, or sustained. So that's attention. That's the first big bubble. The next one is working memory. That's your short-term active memory. That's the memory that you need when you are listening to mom give instructions. So if you're in your homeschool and you're talking to your kids and you're giving them the list of five things they need to accomplish for the day, if you have a child that has weak working memory, they might catch the first one. They might catch the last one. They're probably going to drop the middle.
Catch none of them. And you're like, why are the dishes still here?
So weak working memory can show up in that way. But it also can show up in things like if a child is reading and they forget everything they just read and can't tell you anything about the story. It can show up in math if they're having trouble with the steps that they're trying to perform in algebra. It shows up when they're working through math facts. A lot of the time when students get into trouble with math, it's when they get into those higher level maths like algebra, because there's so much switching that needs to happen that it really, really hits the working memory hard and they hit like a cognitive overload. And so it makes it really difficult for them to be able to perform the task efficiently. So working memory, really, really important in terms of its capacity. It needs to be able to work quickly. Most working memories for individuals last anywhere from 5 to 7 seconds. It's meant to collect data and dump it. Collect data and dump it. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're not meant to hold it for forever, but you've got to be able to hold it long enough to work with it. Mm-hmm. Processing speed is just how fast your brain is doing all of that. Yeah. In order to be quick, in order not to overload that working memory, you have to process quickly so that you can build automaticity in your tasks. So you were talking about students that you had worked with that really had trouble with math facts. Again, as we get into those higher level math, for example, you got to have really fast processing speed, mm-hmm. as well as automaticity in those math mm-hmm. facts, so that your brain's not getting bogged down in the details. Those details are kind of humming along in the background, and they're able to handle those harder, more complex steps mm-hmm. and tasks and word problems and algebraic equations, all that kind of stuff. Those three skills that I just mentioned, attention, working memory, and processing speed, are what I call automatic processing skills. They're always humming along in the background. It is really the gate, because those three have to be working together for information to keep chugging in your brain. Mm-hmm. If there's a hiccup in any one of those areas, it causes a bounce. And then that information has to be readdressed over mm-hmm. and over and over again until it can finally click through and get to those higher level thinking skills that we're going to talk about here next. So the next skill we'd like to address is logic and reasoning. I think of that as your planning skill. Can you see the big picture and break it down into steps? Can you figure out the instructions or how to build something without someone giving you a line by line example of what to do? Really, really important for test taking. In fact, most SAT and ACT tests are logic tests. You have to be able to figure out what's good, better, best based on the information that they're giving you. And you have to look out for tricks. You have to look out for strategies in order to be able to answer those correctly. Logic is really important in reading because English is actually a very logical language and it's a patterned language. So we have to be able to identify patterns when we're reading. And if logic is weak, it can make reading challenging. It can make comprehension challenging as well. The next one is long-term memory. Most people think of long-term memory as like emotional memories from like when we were young, but it actually is your test-taking memory. It's the memory that you need in order to be able to study and then take the test the next day, or to kind of hold information over time. I think of it as like a big filing cabinet in my brain where things are in there and I should be able to retrieve them with ease. And if I can't mm-hmm. retrieve them, then there's a hiccup there. Either it didn't get filed away or it's been mm-hmm. misfiled and I've got to figure out where it's been filed away. So long-term memory, very, very critical for building overall skill. If a student is really weak in long-term memory, it may feel like Groundhog Day every day or every week when you're trying to introduce mm-hmm. material. Mm-hmm. If you've ever sat with a child and done a math problem and they looked at you like, what is this? Like, we just did this, buddy. We just did this last week. That might identify a little bit of a weak long-term memory skill. And so when long-term memory is weak, it makes test-taking really, really challenging, obviously, because mm-hmm. it's your test-taking skill. It makes retrieval of information really challenging. So things like even remembering names of friends and family, being able to keep up in conversations because you're able to pull information out with ease, being able to retain information that you're learning, that all kind of stems from that long-term memory skill. The next one is auditory processing. This one is my favorite. Auditory processing is a really important skill. In fact, it's so broad. I want to talk about it in terms of how your brain processes language. So when we're babies, we learn language by hearing, right? So, but it's our brain that's processing that information that our ears are collecting. And that's how we learn how to speak and form sentences. And eventually what we have to do is we've got to take that skill of sound and connect it to a visual, right? We've got to connect that sound to a letter. Mm-hmm. So that sound letter connection is where reading comes from. Mm-hmm. If a child is really struggling to read, the probability is about 70% that there is a weak auditory processing issue
yes.
that needs to be addressed. How do you know that you have a weak auditory processing issue? Well, a couple things. If they were late talkers or needed some speech therapy early on, that's kind of a red flag that there was some auditory processing stuff and that reading is going to be a challenge. They could be reading by using memory or visual processing skills. And you'll know that there's an auditory processing issue if they're really poor spellers. They're having a really hard time decoding mm-hmm. words by sound. That's also a big red flag. The brain's super complex, so we don't talk about dyslexia so much because it's such a broad umbrella and it even has a new DSM title. So, but that big broad umbrella is hard because there can be lots of issues yes. underneath a skill like reading. So it's really important to understand cognitive skills so that you know where to aim and target and yes. to help that student.
Before we continue, I want to share with you a program that has been a game changer for our family. At our Learning Center, we instructed and helped kids through pretty much every program on the market. So we know firsthand just how important a solid math foundation is for our kids' futures. Finding the right homeschool math curriculum that didn't compromise academic excellence, but also didn't put me and my kids through the ringer was a challenge. Until one day, I found CTC Math. You guys, the rest was history. First off, it's a mastery-based program, which means your child gets a full grasp of the material. It's also loaded with mixed reviews, ensuring your kids don't forget anything they've learned. The questions are adaptive too, which keeps students confident and progressing at their own pace. But the best part, all the teaching, grading, and testing, done for you. With CTC Math, there is no compromise on excellence. Your child gets a top-notch education, and you just made your homeschool life easier. Visit CTC Math to get your free trial today. Whether you're newer to homeschooling or you've been homeschooling over a decade, the fact is creating a streamlined, successful homeschool is hard. The pressure is high and the weight of responsibility often leads to self-doubt, second-guessing, and feeling completely overwhelmed with the excessive amounts of opinions and curricula options out there. We love our kids, and at the same time, the stakes are high. We don't want to mess this up. So how do we build a homeschool that our kids will thank us for when they're adults, and one that you have 100% confidence in? The first step to pulling all of that off is joining Thrive Homeschool Community. Thrive Homeschool Community is where you learn the 8-step homeschool success framework to build an undeniably successful homeschool. Each year and each kid presents us with uncharted territory. But when you have a good plan, the right plan, you can rest in the security and confidence that you are doing a great job. The path is easy. Join Thrive, say a quick hello to your new friends, start the 8-step homeschool success framework, and kiss anxiety goodbye. It's risk-free, no contracts. You can cancel anytime, no questions asked. Go to christy-faith.com. That's christy-faith.com. Enter promo code podcast for $10 off your first month. See you inside.
And this is why, and I think it's so important that there comes a point where I always advise professional intervention for homeschool mamas, especially if they've gone through some of the really solid reading programs that are written correctly and their kid is still struggling. I 1000% always recommend seeing a specialist, and a good one, because there are some bad specialists out there as well. Okay, I just have to say, like, I am like getting goosebumps talking to you because I feel like I found one of my people. Like, the way you're talking about how kids learn in the processing, I feel like it's just very exciting to, this is the first, I don't know if the audience knows this, but she and we've been stalking each other on social media, but we don't actually know each other. But I had a feeling I knew I'd really like you, but it just because I can tell how much you truly, truly care and you want to get to the bottom of what is going on in the brain so that you can help kids succeed. So yeah. Mamas, please, if you have to rewind to hear that auditory processing piece again, please do hit that back button and then re-listen to those last 3 minutes again, because literacy is vital. It is vital. And there is some damaging advice out there in the homeschool world regarding literacy. And it is a hill that I will die on until the day that I die. So yay for Sandy. Okay. Are you done with the auditory part? I'm just eating this up.
No, let me add a little bit more. Auditory processing is super tricky because it can hide. And so I want to point out another place that it kind of shows up. Auditory processing weakness can show up with attention issues. And here's why. Mm-hmm. When you have selective attention struggles, it's because your brain has a hard time pushing sound out and pulling sound in. We talked about that just a second ago. It is very common for ADHD and dyslexia to be comorbid, which means that
yes,
there are some similarities there. And weak auditory processing is one of those similarities that they both can have. So it's not just a reading mm-hmm. skill. It encompasses a lot of things. One of them is listening comprehension, being able to hear the person in front of you and process that language effectively. Yeah. Think about if you have a student who is, or a child who's really highly sensory sensitive, like especially loud noises, that's a big red flag that auditory processing might be an issue. Mm-hmm. Because again, if they startle easily with every loud noise, if they hate being in loud rooms, it's because they can't tune that sound in and out effectively in their brain. And so it's overstimulating. And it really, really causes a lot of havoc in the brain. Mm-hmm. The last one I do want to point out is visual processing. A lot of times someone will tell me, you were talking about hills you'll die on. I have a lot of them too. So one of them is
another episode. All the hills you're going to die on. That's
right. One of the hills I will die on is that you use your whole brain to learn. You aren't a certain type of learner, right? You're not a visual learner or an auditory learner. You do use all of those. If you tend to rely on visual things to learn, it is because you have probably really strong visual memory, but not visual processing. So let me clarify what that means. Mm-hmm. Visual processing is your brain's ability to make its own pictures in your mind's eye, mm-hmm. to be able to turn things around, to be able to see things from many angles, to create that movie when you're reading that really good book and you see that whole, all the characters in the scene, you see all of that in that mind's eye. It enables you to recognize whole words, visual processing. So you see that word and it pops off the page, enables you to break down things like syllables and root words and words. It's a really, really, really helpful skill for comprehension. Okay. Math is a skill that uses visual processing as well, because in early elementary years, you're trying to build that understanding of numbers, right? Number sense and really good fluency and automaticity in numbers. But eventually, math, in order for it to become automatic and efficient, has to switch, and you have to be able to see it in your head. If you don't see math in your head, it makes it really hard to understand as math gets more and more complex, because we lose that ability to see math when we get into things like algebra, statistics, and geometry. So we need that visual processing to be able to comprehend. All of those skills work together in the blink of an eye. It's really hard to know where there might be a hiccup without some sort of cognitive testing. Mm. So what I love about what we do, that's the first step. We always start with some testing to figure out where those brain skills are.
Does a psychologist do the testing? How do you guys go about that?
So there are some psychologists who own centers, but we don't diagnose anything at our center. That's not what we do. We use our testing as a response to intervention tool. So we just want to look at skill and see where the skills are. We do that through the WJ4 for some centers that have licensed psychologists who can do that. My center uses the Gibson test of cognitive skills, which is mm-hmm. a shorter test that is really sort of a survey test. It's been peer reviewed and it has, reliability and validity, mm-hmm. but it's just a response to intervention tool to help us know where to target and aim, because that's our goal. Our goal is to kind of see the picture, and then we're going to individualize a program to help build the skill that's missing.
And that's vital. Anyone hearing this who is interested in getting their child extra help, if you are not hearing this type of conversation from whoever you are talking to, meaning figuring out what's going on and targeting those specific areas, they will be wasting your money. That is the first thing someone needs to do when you are hiring someone for an intervention. Another important thing that I think is important for my audience in particular is that we don't necessarily need formal diagnoses. we are homeschool families. Really, when you go to get testing done and to get formal diagnosed, like my kid has ADHD, my kid is diagnosed with dyslexia, you need those generally when your kid is in some sort of school system, generally public school system, to receive accommodations and an IEP and get on an IEP plan. We homeschool. So often I tell parents, you do not need to pay $15,000 to an educational psychologist for a diagnosis. You can go about it in different ways. To really what you want is you want to figure out what's going on and then target those particular things, which can be done. And so can you elaborate on that a little bit more? Because I think that's a vital piece, especially for homeschool families.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're exactly right. The only purpose for a diagnosis is if you are trying to get accommodations, compensation strategies, or if, for example, for ADHD, if you want to look into medication, right, to help with any symptoms that you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. For the average homeschool family, you want those skills to be isolated so that you can figure out how to target. We had a homeschool family mom tell us recently that homeschool moms are all DIYers, right? we're always like, we're scrappy. We're going to figure out how to do this. But what you need to know about brain skills is that you, in order to target them well and target them correctly, you need to find either, you know, like a trainer like me or a curriculum or something that's going to aim and target that skill with intensity. That's really important. Yes. And a lot of repetition. Yes. You need those two in combination in order to get blood flow and oxygen to those parts of the brain that don't have the support they need at the moment, right? So training helps dive into that skill and help build up that skill. Is it important at the homeschool level? Absolutely. Here's why. When I homeschooled my kids, my goal was that my kids would love learning. That was number one. That was at the top of my pyramid. The next is I wanted them to have great perseverance. I didn't want them to be daunted by tasks or to bail when things got hard. I wanted them to have perseverance. I wanted them to be independent learners. I wanted them to have enough skills under their belt that as they got older, they didn't need me. They could learn anything that they wanted to learn. As a homeschool family, you are going to find, you know, because we always get a lot of kids that, you know, one looks like the dad, one looks like the mom, one looks like the sister. The skills are all different, right? You don't get a homeschool of kids that all have the same learning struggles. You're going to have to isolate and figure out what's going on for each of them so that you're giving them the tools that they need. But you've got to be able to do it strategically. You've got to be know where those skills are so that you can aim and target them and do it in a way that helps build that intensity and repetition for families.
Well, and we're not done yet, but I have to ask this because I know that Learning RX is nationwide, but what mm-hmm. if people fall in love with you? Do you do this stuff? Because they will. Do you do this stuff remotely where people could work yeah. with you, or do they have to find a local Learning RX center?
Well, I would always recommend if you have a local Learning RX center, definitely reach out. I think one-to-one in person is just so much more powerful. But we've done a study and remote training is just as effective. We've seen statistically significant changes in skills, either in person or remote. So you can go either way. In terms of remote, we work with people all over the country. I've had a student from one of the Bahama Islands. So we work all the time to help as many individuals as we can. If you're a homeschool mom and you're inspired, you could even open up your own center and help be a help in your own community. So I'm just a small business here in Virginia that is passionate about brains, but I wish there were more centers all over the place with people who are just as passionate as I am about this topic. But absolutely, we work both remotely and in person.
And I want to ask you, before we move on to the other questions I had, this was not written down, but people listening are going to be wondering, oh, they do reading intervention. Is it Orton-Gillingham?
So it is not Orton-Gillingham. It is our own reading program. We have our own research studies on that. I've mentioned a lot about our research. So you can find our research at the Gibson Institute of Cognitive Research. There you'll find lots of peer-reviewed studies, as well as some randomized control trials on our particular programs that we offer. We've done research on TBI. We've done research on for seniors on not dementia, but some memory loss. So lots of really neat things to look at there. But Orton-Gillingham is its own thing. So Orton-Gillingham is a very well-known, very well-renowned program. There was a research study that came out in the last year or so that talked about gains in reading not being as effective as they were hoping for Orton-Gillingham. But that does not mean that that program is not a really good program. The problem is that when you get something big like Orton-Gillingham that has some research behind it, is that you have a lot of people who are trained, but may or may not do the program the way that it's supposed to be done. So like you were saying earlier, you got to be really careful who you choose, because in order to get the gains and the benefit of a program, you have to have someone who's following it with fidelity.
You know, what's interesting is that one of the mamas in Thrive Homeschool Community, which is my homeschool community, she was extremely frustrated because her gifted child was not spelling, and she had her child with an Orton-Gillingham specialist for a long time. I want to say it was maybe a year. She's probably going to correct me in the DMs when she hears this. I think it was about a year, and she went to somebody else who was trained in the same program as that other, she didn't know this at the time, but trained in the same program as that previous tutor was. But this person was a lot more qualified, had other credentials. She has a master's in special education. She's an extremely intuitive certified Orton-Gillingham tutor, which basically means she's also pulling in other things because she's been doing this so long. And she is reactive. And she said that the previous tutor simply, like, literally just went through the program without actually identifying what was really going on underneath. And I think that's what Learning RX does, is you guys are discovering what is happening.
The show will resume in just a minute, but first I want to share with you an incredible resource that is totally free to homeschooling families everywhere. Have you ever felt like you were on trial for your homeschooling choice when visiting a doctor or another service provider? It's unsettling, especially when someone misinformed has the power to threaten your family. Unfortunately, we have heard countless stories of parents who have felt trapped in offices and met with suspicion rather than support simply because they were homeschoolers. I've been profiled and interrogated myself, and I'm sure many of you have as well. Enough is enough. It's time we proactively vet service providers before giving them our business and our money. Enter Christy Faith's List, a directory 100% free to homeschooling families, connecting you with homeschool-friendly service providers who promise to support you in your homeschooling choice. We want every homeschooler in America to know about and be using this list. So here's how to make Christy Faith's List a household name. One, tell all your friends about it. Let's show the market just how powerful the homeschool movement is. Number two, check Christy Faith's List website before stepping foot into any service provider's office to make sure they are on there. And number three, if your favorite service provider isn't on the list, make sure to refer them. There's a button on the homepage of the website. It takes only 30 seconds, and that way we can send them a lovely invite. If you're listening and you are a homeschool-friendly professional, we want you on the list. We're eager to connect homeschooling families with you, shout your name from the rooftops, and bring you tons and tons of business. We have plans for every type of business, both small, local, nationwide, and worldwide. Check out ChristyFaithsList.com today. Hi, Mama. If you like my social media content and my show, I'm pretty sure you will love my book, Homeschool Rising, Shattering Myths, Finding Courage, and Opting Out of the School System. My book is for homeschool parents, both veteran and new, and the perfect book to hand any homeschool skeptics in your life so they can better understand why you've chosen this amazing lifestyle. This book will challenge you, empower you, encourage you, and give you solid, mindful answers to all those questions you get about your homeschooling choice. Grab your copy and maybe an extra one for your mother-in-law today. Homeschool Rising is available wherever books are sold.
So Orton-Gillingham, just like Barton and Hegarty and some of the big name dyslexia programs out there, like I said, if you've got a really good tutor who's following that program with fidelity, your student if they're having a reading difficulty and their weakness is auditory processing, might do okay in those particular areas with mm-hmm. those particular tutors. The problem lies in, what if the problem is in working memory?
Yes.
What if the problem is in processing yes. speed? What if the problem is in visual processing? Mm-hmm. If there's an issue in another skill area, then that might not be the program that's going to solve the problem. You might need mm-hmm. to dig a little deeper and find a program that's going to harness and really tackle the other skill deficits that are causing the issue or the hiccup.
Is when you do your testing, is it kind of a learning battery that tries to uncover all of those areas, all of those seven areas, including?
We look at the core seven. Yeah, we look at the core seven. And then we usually do, in our center, we do a Kaufman series to academically look and see, where's the reading fluency at? Where's math fluency? Yes. Where's math concept and application knowledge? Where's the reading comprehension knowledge? So we look at that too. We're not tutors. So at our center, we're not necessarily looking to reteach math concepts and information. Our goal is to help build the cognitive side of everything so that when that information gets reintroduced, mm-hmm. especially at home, if you're, you know, the first, third of your math book, it's all review. When that information gets reintroduced, it's going to stick easier. You're going to process it faster. You're going to be able to handle that information when it comes back around to you. So we look at the core seven to really individualize our training goals, but we look at the academic side a little bit to see how is it affecting just regular academic skills like fluency.
So interesting. I'd love to hear a success story. What's one of your favorite stories of just a kid who came in who was an absolute disaster? And then
I have a lot of favorite stories. By the time a student comes to me, a lot of times we're the last resort. Yes, my family has tried everything. They have tried everything under the sun. They have mm-hmm. picked up every curriculum. They've tried tutors. They've tried mm-hmm. medication. They've tried, mm-hmm. depending on what the issue is. So when they come to me, it's always going to be a success story because I just know where they've come. I know where they're at. And when we get through the program, they're going to come out the other side a more confident learner. It's pretty much the number one thing that families tell us all the time. My favorite story, however, I'll have a couple. I'll tell two. One is they're related, so it kind of helps too. They were a homeschool family that came. I was just a trainer at the time. I actually wasn't the owner of my center. And they were in a process, that family, of really thinking through next steps. They had felt led to put their kids in private school. And when they were having the family discussion, one of their children just absolutely panicked. They just thought, there's no way I'll make it in private school. I'm not very smart. I can't do it. I won't be able to keep up. Mm-hmm. And they came to us in tears, really frustrated, trying to figure out how to help. They didn't realize, they knew there was a problem, but because they were a homeschool family, they were, working at their own pace and, just moving forward. But this decision to go into private school just really set off alarm bells for them as to how much their son was internalizing his success and how well he was doing, to the point that he even said, I'm not going to go to college. I'm probably just going to work at McDonald's. It's no big deal. And that just broke my heart, because I always believe that my goal, anytime I work with a student, is to open as many doors and windows as I can for their opportunities for the future. So I wanted him to have all the options. So he came, he worked with us at the center. And when he graduated, he did so well. He ended up going to private school and he graduated with honors. It was just really cool to see that transformation from a totally defeated, absolutely terrified student to one who had confidence and was ready to take on the world.
If you're enjoying the show and you don't want to miss out on future episodes, hit that like and subscribe button and show us some love with your comments. Those 5-star reviews really do make a difference. How long was his intervention?
6 months.
Oh, really? That's fast.
Yep.
Do all the students go through the same protocol?
So we have a preset program that we use. It has lots of tools in that toolbox. So the short answer is yes, but the long answer is no, because it depends on what their particular skill weaknesses are. We're going to spend more time with them on the things that are hard. We'll pull in some things that are not as hard for them just to let them have fun and to build skill in something that they're good at. But for the most part, we're going to live in things that are challenging for them. Mm-hmm. And so that looks different for every student that walks in the door, even though we have the same toolbox to pull from.
Well, and boy, does that require a special person to work with, because when kids are coming already with some emotional trauma, damage, whatever word you want to use, they are, and they're facing more hard things. This was something really big at our center, is we would always train our teachers and say, look, these are kids that are struggling and we need to be a safe place for them, because academics have a very negative connotation for a lot of these kids. So I think that's so vital too, that you're such a safe place for those kids.
Well, what we help them see is that, well, twofold. What we help parents see is that learning struggles are very traumatic in the brain. So while you may have a really, you know, awesome, for if we think about homeschooling, if you have a really awesome homeschooling environment, that doesn't mean that your child's perception of their learning challenges is not causing them anxiety, causing them chronic stress, and causing them trauma. Even though you may be trying to help them through it and accommodating and picking curriculums they like to try to keep them engaged and all of the things that we do as homeschool moms, right? We try to find the curriculum that's going to be the one.
The one, the holy grail that never exists.
It doesn't exist. So, you know, I want parents to see that one, that first, that learning challenges are chronic stress and chronic stress is trauma. So we've got to help a student build skills so that their resiliency bucket grows, right? What you see with families, in fact, we had a webinar the other night with homeschooling families in Virginia, and the question was like, well, what about kids who struggle with ODD, anxiety, anger issues? To understand that that's a trauma response for many students is really the key. If a student is really fighting back or freezing on you, or, you know, avoiding school at all costs, those are all trauma responses. That means that there's a skill that they're lacking. It's causing stress. And so you're getting that response in return. But when you build the skill, you're going to calm that process down and you're going to, that student's going to feel more able to handle things, and that resiliency bucket is going to grow. So that's the first part. I want parents to understand that. The other thing is I want the student to understand that too. I want them to understand that they can do something even if they can't do it right now. And so our tools that we use are very structured. We start everybody at the bottom. If you think of it like a scaffold, you know, we've got to get a foundation first. We got to make sure all those foundation pieces are strong so that you can build the next tier and then the next tier and then the next tier. When you don't have a strong foundation, that's what's causing a lot of that discomfort in the brain. So we need to make sure those things are firmly rooted, the skills are there underneath. And then the trick is to help a student have lots of success. And in order to do that, you start that foundation level. You've got to build that one brick at a time. They see that success over and over and over again. You're able to push a little harder, challenge them a little more, and then it rolls like a snowball. And then you're able to build skill in 6 months, because we're constantly tackling that skill over and over and over again, and they're getting lots of success in it, and it feels good. They don't even realize it's happening.
How many hours a week is your program?
So we get the gains that we get, again, because our two key components, intensity and repetition, we get the gains we get because we work with our students up to 3 times a week for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So that's 4.5 hours a week that they're working one-to-one.
Yep.
So,
and you should not be alarmed to hear that, listeners, because when we did our interventions with reading, I mean, there were times where there were cases that were so severe that we actually requested the child be pulled out of school so that we could do interventions as well. So,
I tell that to homeschool families too. If I have a homeschool family that comes in and their skill, their their child skills are really low and we've got a lot of work to do, I will let them know, hey, you let us handle the skills that are super important, like the math fluency and the reading skills, and you do the fun stuff. Take that burden off your plate. You go do the science experiments, go do the field trips, write journals, make slime all winter long, make learning at home fun so that you can come after the training's done, be able to then engage in curriculum again. So yeah, absolutely. I tell homeschool families the same thing.
Yeah.
Harder to do with public school families. I usually get them after school, but for homeschool families, since they have so much flexibility, and usually moms are so guilt ridden at the time that they come to me, because they've tried everything. They've done every resource out there that they can think of. They tried every trick. And like you mentioned before, you know, one of the big myths that I loathe in the homeschool community is to just let it go. Let it go. It'll click. Eventually it'll click in. But unless you know exactly what's going on in the brain of your child, that guarantee is not there. So catching a student early, getting early intervention is absolutely critical.
Yeah. I hope the listeners here who listen, and the people who listen to my podcast, they know that I have people on who are experts in their field, who have read the research. You guys, listen up. The people who are doing the research, the people who are doing these intervention programs, who are highly educated and are up on all of the research. One of my friends who is an interventionist, she has a master's degree in special ed. She literally gets notifications when new studies come out on her field. And it is vital. There is no reason to say that early intervention is a bad idea. Truthfully, it is not. Around third, fourth grade is where our kids, the learning to read ends and school transitions to reading to learn. And if your kid cannot read, and I don't mean just fluency, because reading is also what you were saying, making that movie in your head, it's that comprehension piece, both when they read it and when they hear it. If those aren't all integrated and together, they will struggle in the later years. And I'm sure there's a lot of parents listening. When you were mentioning the clicking of the pen, I was like, guilty. I'm like, well, I want to be tested. I wonder, you'd probably find a slew of stuff with Christy Faith. I'm sure you'd have a heyday, but I am so, this was jam packed, man. I am so glad that you had the time to come on the show. Where can my audience find you?
Sure. So I'm kind of all over the place. So I wish I had like one quick little
figuratively and literally.
Yeah. So if you want to follow me on TikTok, I'm at the Brain Trainer Lady. So I do share a lot of helpful resources. I give demos on there. I do a lot of different things. Hopefully they're of value to people and they can gain some wisdom there. My center is LearningRx Stanton and Harrisonburg. So if you Google that online, you'll find me there. If you want to find a program just in general, you can always just go to learningrx.com. And they can connect you with someone close to you or someone who can work with you remotely as well. I also do my own podcast. I'm a co-host there with the head of our research arm at the Gibson Institute of Cognitive Research. It's called The Brainy Moms. And we have a lot of fun there. We don't just talk about cognitive training. We actually talk about all sorts of topics. So for example, this week we were talking about anxiety. We've talked to different therapists for things like managing your home better, like you'd name it, any mom topic you can think of, from birth to even teens and young adults, we try to cover it. So you can find me there as well.
Wonderful. And we will put all of those links in the show notes. Thank you so much for making all of us better homeschoolers today.
Thanks, Christy. You have my heart.